Welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 4.26, where we're not rebuilding, we're reloading. You know what we have to talk about? It was week two of the USFL, and we watched a game together, kind of. Do you remember anything from it?
Wasn't there like a third and 25 conversion or something?
Fourth and 25 conversion from their own like 15.
Yeah.
And it was Shea Patterson.
Yep.
And they did it again. And for the second week in a row, Shea Patterson drives his team down to the 20-yard line, down not quite a full score, and the ball is almost caught for a game-winning touchdown, but it's not, for a different reason. Also, we saw no points scored in the second half since we turned it on. It's 10-6, which is interesting because if you look at the rest of the games, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, I think, started their game with like back-to-back pick sixes, and then Birmingham and Houston scored over 60 points in their game. And maybe the best team in the league, New Orleans, just absolutely thumped Tampa yesterday, scoring 34 points. So there was plenty of scoring in the USFL all weekend, just not in the Friday night game that you and I got to partake in. Did you watch any of the other things?
No.
No? Has it kind of drifted beyond your interest at this point?
I was never interested. There's enough football in the NFL.
Okay.
I enjoy the off season of sports. I don't need endless stimulation.
Who are the Lions going to draft?
Well, that's the interesting question. I am starting to look over the scouting reports because I don't research way in advance.
Right at the end.
There's too much draft content out there, and some guys rise and fall and blah blah blah. I just like to come in at the very end and see what the final rankings are, and then skim over them. Well, the news of today you might have seen, or yesterday or tomorrow or whenever this is being listened to, but
or all of the days,
is that Trevon Walker is now the Vegas betting favorite to go number one overall.
Really?
Yep.
Because of his combine scores?
Yeah. I mean, he's the classic example of a guy that's just a guy and then, you know, sets the combine on fire. And then all of a sudden, he's the big prospect. And that always makes me extremely nervous. Because to me, if you're that good, maybe you should have produced in college. I don't know. Just me. But that's kind of the case with him, which is pretty interesting, right? Like, we did FFFF for Georgia back in December. And I watched their tape and I was like, okay, this guy's decent. But he was like the fifth or sixth most notable player on the Georgia defense. And Now this is the odds on favorite to go one overall. And look, might be true. His testing scores are really crazy. He is 272 pounds, but can, outrun Wilton Spate. And
do you think you could give Wilton Spate a run for his money?
I don't know. It depends on if he's injured or not. But no, the point is he's really, really fast for a guy that size and all that stuff. But I don't know. On-field production worries me. And Kayvon Thibodeau, we got a report today that the Lions really love him. Last week, we got a report that they hate him. I don't know. Someone's going
to be like those Valentines.
Or we'll find out they were completely ambivalent about him.
Yeah.
No opinions. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I think the only outcome that would make Lions fans really happy is if the Jaguars take Trevon Walker or any of the offensive linemen and then the Lions take Hutchinson. That seems like the consensus one that will make everyone happy. All of the other options will make some people happy and some people mad.
Be divided. But Hutchinson's kind of that guy, right? Like, if anyone takes him, that fan base is probably going to be like, well, he was really good. All right. Whereas if you take somebody else, you're going to have, oh, yeah, well, we need a left tackle or we need a quarterback or we need a defensive whatever. But he's the guy that you look at and you're like, he's maybe the surest thing to be pretty good.
Yeah, and it's a high floor, right?
Yeah.
And the intangibles are all really good, and I think a lot of people would be happy with that. So, we'll see. The drafts are always so weird because it's the ultimate delayed gratification, right?
Yeah.
The draft is unquestionably the most important thing in the NFL, as it is in most of the sports. NBA, maybe not, but the other ones, exceptionally so. And you have to build your team through the drafts. However, you don't get to know who is good at the draft until like several years in the future. So
Right.
you
It's
get
not
hyped
even the
up,
next year.
you watch all these picks, you know how important this is, and then you don't actually know who won the draft until long afterwards, because the people who walk out of the draft as the winners are just the ones who got the picks with good value,
Yeah.
according to Mel
Whomever.
Kiper's mock draft, right?
Mel
Like
Kiper.
it's, I remember when the Detroit Lions were the consensus winner of the 2011 NFL draft. Don't look up who those picks were. Spoiler alert, it didn't end well. But that's the point. You can walk out of the draft feeling like you won the draft, and then you actually were like the biggest loser. And you don't know until several years in the future. So, point is, don't throw your remote through the television if the team picks the guy you don't want, because if in 3 years' time he's still the guy you don't want, then you can break your TV, but not on draft night.
And meanwhile, you should probably be saving for the new TV just in case you decide to, or you're going to throw your remote through the TV for what happened 3 years ago, right? So you should always be saving for a new
I've
TV.
broken several TVs over the T's Tabor selection, so.
You and Craig. So are you going to be as excited about this draft as anyone in the last few years because of the potential progress that the Lions looked that they made, and they have a bunch of picks
Oh,
and
I'm not. I'm never as into the draft as a lot of people. I mean, it's a whole industry for some folks, but
well, I was doing more of an Alex Drain comparison to Alex Drain in previous years.
possibly. I mean, in some of the previous drafts, I was protesting Matt Patricia and
With
Bob
like a
Quinn.
sign
So,
marching around.
look, I told this to someone the other day. As long as the Lions don't draft somebody who A, kills two people, B, goes insane and winds up in prison, or C, shows up at camp 50 pounds overweight, they've
Oof.
already cleared the bar of several past drafts.
You've lived through some stuff, I see. Well, I don't know. I always get excited about it. I'm a Jets fan, I guess, as much as one can be, and I get excited for their picks, but I also get excited just to watch the draft. I think it's really exciting to look back at like all of the players that you watch through college football and see where they fit and see how teams manage their rosters. You know, there's always going to be that one or two picks in the first round that no one's ever heard of that you're just like, what? And this guy was supposed to be a fourth rounder. I don't know. I find it to be interesting. Roster management is arguably the most interesting part of sports outside of sometimes the games themselves.
Well, this is a big draft for the Jets, right? Two top 10 picks.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of guys up there that
There's a lot of guys in the draft. 250 something of them.
one of them will be irrelevant. But I think there's a lot of options that they can take because I don't think they have a ton of players. And so taking a player of a position that you need, as long as you don't go too far off book, is probably going to be a decent selection. I mean, I suppose you can screw up top 10 picks, but like you said, don't select criminals or super head cases, and maybe you'll be all right. The last thing we should touch on before we get into what our podcast is actually about is it was a nice week for Michigan players in their what I can't even say debuts anymore, their first couple weeks in the NHL now, as Matty Beniers scored again. Blankenberg had the game winner for the Blue Jackets.
The first NHL goal for
First
him.
NHL goal, but it was a winner, right?
It turned out to be a
It
winner.
turned out to be, I guess. And Bortolo had quite a night last night, or whenever, a few days ago, whenever you're listening to this, beating Vegas in the shootout with quite a goal. I guess you watched live. I had gone to bed, I think.
I was not watching that game for the entire game until the shootout. I had been notified that It was a good time to turn on the TV.
To turn on the game. It's the eighth inning of a no-hitter. Everybody flip over.
Yeah, because everyone's favorite running storyline, the collapse of the Vegas Golden Knights, was reaching its climax after the Sharks scored twice in the final 3 minutes in a game Vegas had to win, including the game-tying goal with under 3 seconds remaining. And then in the shootout, nobody scored until Bortolo was the third shooter for San Jose, and he walked it off. Pretty nice dangles. He beat a goalie no one's ever heard of because that's how Vegas' season has gone. But pretty nice because that, you know, that story got reported across to the hockey Twitter, and he got to be the one with his face at the front of the story.
Well, he's had quite a jump to pro hockey as he went to the AHL and blew up so fast that the Sharks realized that they could not wait until next year, that they bumped him up for the last few games, and has recorded multiple points now. And I mean, we talked last week about how much we both really liked him and obviously liked him for 2 years now, but looks like he's going to have a fun place in the NHL.
As fun as San Jose can be.
Well, that's a fair point, I guess. All right. So this is kind of the sort of mixed emotions podcast because it's a little bit sad as we've said goodbye to, well, most of Michigan's roster, players that we've watched for years and rooted for and enjoyed seeing them develop. And now we hit the reload button to fill in Michigan's roster of all of their recruits. And there are a few.
Yeah, it's a big class. They are bringing in 12, a proper dozen. The Baker's dozen was denied. We received news that Finley Williams has flipped to Notre Dame. Is that right?
I think that is correct. Yes.
Yeah. It completed he was the player to be named later in the Rutger McGroarty trade. So, that transaction finally approved by the league offices. But I don't know much about him. He was not one of the headliners of the class, but that donut is thrown out of the box, and now we are down to the standard dozen.
So we've broken them down into 7 forwards, I believe, and 5 defensemen. We'll go through the forwards first. First two guys that we can touch on are guys that have already been drafted. Jackson Hallam was taken in the 2020 draft, so a couple of drafts ago. He was taken 91st overall. That would be a third round pick?
It was the back end of the third.
Back end of the third round?
Yeah.
You did, first of all, I want to give you a lot of credit. You did a ton of research on this and came up with a lot to do. I know a few things about some of these guys, but you went hardcore in depth so that I kind of baited you into this so that when you said you're not a scout for things anymore, I can throw this back.
Well, I didn't watch any tape really. I might be doing a series of pieces about each guy in the summer. But for that, I might watch things. But for this, I was just looking at stats and reading what people had to say.
You can't go too much in depth right now anyways. You're just trying to fill in who's going to be on the roster and what we sort of project. And if you want to wax poetically about certain guys, that's fine. But, you know, the purpose of this is to just get familiar with the names and maybe fit into a spot on the roster that, hey, you know, this guy could be like player X, Y, or Z, or he might be on this line or that line, things like that, or what to expect. And the thing that I've heard about Hallam from, I guess we can call it shared sources, is that he is very, very fast.
Yeah, that's the whole thing with him. He's a one-trick pony, and that one trick, or I guess that one pony, is a meaty steed, let's say.
Meaty steed, I like it.
Very robust skill. he is just a world-class skater for the amateur level. Would probably be an above-average skater in the NHL right now. Just an exceptional skater for a draft eligible prospect. And that caused Vegas to draft him, despite the fact he was a prep kid when they drafted him. There's not a ton of guys who get picked out of high school hockey directly. A lot of times they'll play high school and then they'll go to the USHL and then they'll get picked. But he had never played outside of the Minnesota high school circuit when he was picked.
Which is like a good place to start, though. I mean, Minnesota high school is...
It's a high level of play, yeah. But it's not a thing you normally see. Vegas also... So the thing with him was he is one of those guys that's right before the cutoff. Like he's a week older or like a week before when like Quinn Hughes's birthday is. And Hughes fell on the other side where he was, drafted in like his 18 turning 19 year. And Hallam was drafted in his 17 turning 18 year. There's that stretch in the fall where the calendar flips and they cut it off. So when he was drafted by Vegas in a typical year, he would have been drafted at like 17 and 9 months. He was drafted technically at 18 because the draft that year was held in October, but that was a COVID related thing and not to Hallam. But point is he was very, very, very young when he was drafted. And his parents sent him to kindergarten at 5 turning 6 instead of 4 turning 5. So he spent another year after being drafted in high school hockey, which is also extremely unusual. But point was, he had not graduated high school yet. So he spent another year at St. Thomas Academy. Then he moved to the Green Bay Gamblers, the USHL. Played their 15 games at the conclusion of last season. And then this year was his first year in the USHL. So if you want to know why it took him so long to reach Michigan relative to his draft year, that long saga is why. An extremely young drafted player who spent longer in high school and then made it to the USHL. And in his first season, the USHL did very well. First full season, that is. 50 points in 62 games. 70 points in 62 games, did the math wrong there, was very effective with Green Bay. Then he was traded to the Dubuque Fighting Saints, where he continued to play pretty well. The scouting report on Hallam, besides the skating, is that Vegas took him despite the high school hockey thing, despite the fact he doesn't have any other skills, because of the skating, basically.
Is this the drafting a wide receiver / corner because they're super fast and you're going to kind of teach them some technique?
That was the idea behind Vegas. There were questions about his processing speed, hockey IQ, those sorts of things when he was transitioning from the USA from high school to USHL. I'm not sure if those have been sort of mollified, but regardless, he'll have the ability to threaten vertically and probably play quite a bit in the rush, and we'll see if he has other skills or if he's just going to be a very frustrating player.
Do you think his probably ceiling is what, middle six?
I mean, a guy with that speed, you know, they can go a long way if they bring it all together. Probably still some degree of a project, I would say, but I would expect him to be in the lineup right away, and we'll see what he can do. I think there's a wide range, because if he comes in with just the speed and really nothing else, then probably won't see much. But if he can finish like just a tiny bit, then he could really score. So we'll see.
All right. The other guy in this class that's already been drafted is Keenan Draper, son of someone you may have heard of before. He was a 7th rounder last year in 2021. This guy is more of a, what would you say, 4th liner, probably.
A lot of people who listen to this podcast are also Red Wings fans. If you remember Chris Draper, it's just that, but at the college level.
The fighting?
No, Chris Draper wasn't much of a fighter. No. McCarty did most of the fighting on the grind line, as did Joe Koser. Keenan Draper, you know, he when you read the scouting report, it's all the same stuff, right, that was said about Chris Draper, right? Defense and intangibles, right? Those kinds of things. Born leader, knows his role, knows how to kill penalties, knows how to block shots, blah, 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 right? Now, doing that at the BCHL level is very different than doing it in the NHL level for 20 years, the way Chris Draper did. And at this point, it remains quite a long shot that Keenan Draper would reach that level, let alone win a Selke. But Can he replicate that at the college level? Probably. And I'm not sure right away, but quite possible he could be on the fourth line right away. 50 points in 53 games this season. He was in the BCHL, the only Canadian amateur prospect who was playing in Canadian leagues that Michigan's bringing in this year. He was with the Chilliwack Chiefs. Yeah, I mean, I think he's a replacement for Garrett Van Wy.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Right? Like, I'm not sure if he can play center. Obviously, his dad did, and a lot of players do at one point in their career. So we'll see where they choose to use him. But that's the logical thought right now. He was taken seventh round by the Red Wings. For those who don't know, Chris Draper is the director of amateur scouting of the Red Wings, not just a former alumni, but someone who was actually like the second in command of the draft room.
Paid to do this.
Yeah. So yeah. There, it's more than just connections.
Courtesy selection.
I don't know. It's tough to say. But when you get to the seventh round, a lot of times those prospects are guys who one of the scouts in your room absolutely loves and says, you know, this guy is the flyer we need to take a swing on. I don't know if that was his dad was the one who had fallen in love with him, but someone did. So,
yeah, but like you said, probably slotting in to start, because here's the thing to remember is, you know, we'll get to this more in segment two, but Michigan doesn't bring back a ton of forwards. So all of these guys are going to get a really, really good chance to play right away. And could there be some portal additions? Yeah, potentially. But I think that if right now Michigan's going to basically be icing all of the players that are counted as forwards, right? As of currently, if they add other guys, they do. But so when you think about that, he's a guy, like you said, that could fill in on the fourth line and maybe play some PK because, you know, ex-player's kid, coach's kid, they're probably going to know what they're doing. How well they can do it or what their high-end ceiling is something else. But you would expect him to, you know, have a little bit more of an understanding of what to do because, well, he was probably taught that as soon as he could hold a stick.
If there's anything you'd expect Keon Draper to inherit hockey-wise, it would be the ability to forecheck or kill penalties. So,
well, Michigan can use that always. Well, anyone can. But anyway, so those are the two forwards that have already been drafted. The guys that are then going to go in this year's draft, we can start at the top. It's Frank Naser. I saw him a year ago when he was with, I believe, the U17s. He came to Yost this year with the U18s, I think. And I watched a little bit of that. I'm not sure if you saw any of that. But this guy is a probable lottery pick. He's not a top high-end pick, not like Logan Cooley, who Michigan was sniffing around, but is still probably, I would say, the best player in this year's draft class.
Of the Michigan recruits, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what I meant.
The thing with Nazar relative to Cooley that's worth just pointing out is that if Nazar goes 11th and Cooley goes second, the gap between those two may not be very large. This is a draft where there's really one guy at the top, and then there are a lot of guys after that could go in any order. So it would not shock me to see Nazar go borderline top five. It wouldn't shock me to see him go in like 27th. This is a really strange draft. There is not a lot of separation between the players right now, but the consensus has him in that like 10 to 12 range roughly. He could be a guy that the Red Wings could be in play for depending on how the lottery shakes out, but that would be kind of the range that people see. 64 points in 51 games for the NTDP this year. Was one of their better players, an undersized guy, but has the speed to make up for it, and he works really hard. Compete level is always at the top of all of his scouting reports. So he should slot in as a, you know, top two lines type of guy, and I would expect him, given that Michigan lost their top two centers, to be one of the top two centers this year.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Pretty reasonable. And obviously, you know, I don't know about his hands. It's not doesn't really come up on the scouting report, but certainly you can make the Bortolo comparisons from a skating and size standpoint. You know, very similar size guys. It
both faster than Bortolo, though.
The 5'9", 5'10" range. Yeah, Nazar's definitely faster in a straight line. So we'll see about that, but he's an easy bet to be one of the top two centers, I think. I
mean, yeah, that makes
so he's number four on the elite prospects ranking. He is 17th in the Sam Constantino Sportsnet rankings. He's 14th on the Bob Fathers rankings, and the McKenzie rankings are basically what NHL GMs are thinking. So we're talking in those early teens, but as I just pointed out, would not shock me to see him go very high if someone falls in love, because this is a draft more than any other where it's going to be, here's a basket of 20 guys. Who are you in love with? And we'll find out which GMs are in love with who.
Yeah. And regardless, he's going to be a guy that you're going to be hearing about a lot next year and probably going to be on the score sheet a fair bit, I would say. A guy that he's been playing with this year at the USNTDP and could easily be playing with next year, who has maybe one of the better names at Michigan, if not in college hockey, is Rutger McGroarty. Say that three times fast. McGroarty. Yeah. You can go a lot of directions with that. But he was a winger, though, right? I mean,
he's a winger, yeah.
And a scorer, for sure.
He's a guy that's interesting because there was a time when he was seen in the top five range, and that has changed. I still haven't exactly traced why that has changed, but he is tumbled down the board a tiny bit, but he is still kind of in like the 20-ish range. I think that would be pretty reasonable, kind of below the Nazar tier, but is a guy who scored at a pretty high rate for the NTDP this year, 62 points in 50 games, a lot of goals too. Works hard, a little bit of skill, a slightly bigger body, and people definitely use the power forward term there. He is 6 foot tall, but he's 205 pounds. Oh. So this is a boy that wants to bang around a little bit.
Couple C's in thick there.
Sure. The concern that I do know it's out there is the skating, which is very interesting because Michigan does not take on a lot of prospects that have skating as their weakness, certainly on the defense, but really throughout the lineup. And the first couple guys we mentioned here have skating as their like calling card. So a little different to have a guy that is kind of the opposite of that, but a good player, should be in the first round. If not, he falls probably into the Bortolo zone in the early second. His dad played for a while. His dad was a half defenseman, half forward who bounced around a lot of leagues, ECHL, WCHL, Austria, all over for many years. But those were all before Rutger was born. So some pedigree there, but he did not live like in Europe, the way Bortolo did.
Is skating something that can or will be tinkered with?
Oh, it can be.
Is that something that Michigan might look at and say, hey, you've got a lot?
I don't know if I would doubt that Michigan would be the one that would deal with it.
Okay. That might be more of a professional draft.
That's normally outside the kind of capacity of the college because of the rules that the NCAA has about how often you can practice and right. It's yeah. The stories that are out there tend to be guys like Braden Point it's just crazy that he was a guy that was once thought of as a weak skater, considering how fast he is now. But that tends to be they reach the AHL and then or they work with the team that drafts them. And there's plenty of skating gurus out there and they try and, bring your knees in or whatever the issue is. Right. Increase your ankles. Strength, whatever the issue is. But Rutger, I would assume will be a guy who will be more around the net given the size and the power forward message, but we'll see.
And these are both guys. We didn't mention Nazar, but with Nazar and McGroarty, they're both probably not one and done guys. You would guess they're at least two, maybe 3 year players, depending on the development.
At that draft slot, two is the typical number. But we'll see.
The next guy on the list, that's going to go in this draft is Tyler Haskins. You have him listed as a possible late rounder. The interesting part that I liked is you said that McCault loves his creativity and playmaking. And given that there are a bunch of other guys on that are returning that are sort of listed as shooters, scorers, like the Dukes and the Ciccolinis and the Samos, you know, having a guy that can create some things, especially around the net, he could find himself, I would think, in on a scoring line potentially.
Yeah, it's quite possible. Haskins spent 2 years in the USHL, was not particularly great the first year, but this past season he was with Madison, 45 points in 52 games. Neutral zone was always really a fan of his, and he's shown up on some draft projections as a guy that you could see go in the fifth to seventh round type range, maybe earlier, but what you hear is the creativity and playmaking and things like that, which could be a case of a team that likes that skill, right? They saw him make some fancy dekes, and they say, hey, that's a projectable skill, and they take a flyer on him. It's possible. But a guy that should play probably in the lower end of the lineup to start, and then will work his way up and would likely be a 3 to 4 year player.
Yeah. Then maybe the crown jewel of this class is not a guy who's going to go in this draft. He is going to play his D-1 year at Michigan. He's been on people's radars for a couple years now since they've received his commitment. His brother we will talk about when we get to the defenseman, but Adam Fantilli played with the Chicago Steel and has the potential to go top five, top three in two drafts. Obviously there's a couple of, what did you say? Meaty steeds that will probably go ahead of him, but Adam Fantilli is going to be something to behold, I believe. All the reports that we've talked to different people connected to junior hockey, and everybody loves him. They think he's going to be quite the watch here. And so you add him into a couple of these other players we're talking about, and Michigan's going to have some high-end players, and this guy may be the highest.
Yeah, Adam Fantilli is a guy that, you know, he's been on the radar for a long time. So an interesting thing about him, I don't know the family, but his real name is Adomo Fantilli, which would make me believe, given that his brother's name is Luca, that they are Italian, probably with parents who perhaps immigrated much more recently, which is not uncommon in Canada whatsoever. They're from the Vaughan area, just outside of it, which is the sort of Italian enclave for immigrants in the Toronto area. And so with those credentials, typically that's a player who would end up in the OHL and probably be drafted very, very highly. What happened with Adam Fantilli is Luca was not going to cut it in the OHL. And,
like at all.
Was not going to get drafted, my understanding, early on. So he decided to go the USHL route, and then Adam basically followed him. And so Luca was with the Chicago Steel, and Adam followed him there. Adam also is like 17 and has a full beard. There was an image of that. He's at the UA.
So he could work at MGO Block.
yes, he can take your job. the U18s he's competing in right now with Canada getting just slaughtered because the CHL never sends their prospects to the U18s, but because he is the rare Canadian outside the CHL, he is there competing against the top talent from everybody else. So, but is doing fine there, obviously, and 74 points in 54 games in the USHL this season for Adam Fantilli was, I think, like the eighth highest scorer in that league. And he was in his age 17 season, very good, obviously. And people just love him as a prospect. And I think at this point in time, it is very easy to say that he is a better prospect than Matty Beniers.
You mean for the NHL?
Yeah, just in general. Like
I mean, when you picture him coming onto the ice at Michigan, do you think he's better than Matty Beniers was at Michigan? He will be better than him at Michigan, or that their his ceiling is just higher once they age out?
I would say both. He's not he's not Kent Johnson in terms of sort of needing to bulk up physically, you know, necessarily. Adam Fantilli is a big boy. He is, let me pull up his exact measurables on Elite Prospect so I get this right, but he projects as kind of your classic big body centerman. Yeah, he's listed at 6'3", 192. He could definitely add some more muscle, but he's already regarded as a guy who's really good on the boards and just big, strong, powerful, and yet has pretty good skating ability for that size. So, you know, think of him, you know, kind of like Beniers in some ways, but taller and heavier, which
with the same gifts.
yeah, which could definitely help. But in terms of his ability to play on the cycle, he's a guy that, you know, someone we know was comparing to Crosby in some ways, in that not as a prospect, obviously, but stylistically, right?
Yeah.
Crosby, as people have always said, is the greatest fourth liner of all time. Crosby is not really like a super flashy guy. He tends to play with gritty guys. He doesn't necessarily play well with sort of skilled finesse guys. Obviously, Pascal Dupuis, his eternal line mate for many years, was the classic example of this. And Fantilli kind of fits that mold as someone. And John Tavares would be another one who tends to work better with grindliney type guys who like to bang around and they love to dig and just dominate on the cycle. That's what you would be seeing with him. But he also has really good hands with the skating and all of the size ability too. The Deeks are not the most productive right now. That I think is something that can get some work, but you know, a lot of Crosby and Malkin in his game stylistically. Quentin Byfield from the Sudbury Wolves, now of the LA Kings, was a top draft prospect a few years ago. That's kind of in the Fantilli mold, as you know, 6'3", 6'4" centers who are big and fast. A guy that the draft guys are salivating over, and
he's not even going to be taken in a couple months.
Correct.
We're looking at like 15 months out when he'll be drafted. Now, the odds of him being around for a second year are probably a lot lower than most of the other guys we're talking about.
Yeah, so he right now is projected to go number 3 in the 23 draft because of the existence of Connor Bedard and Matvei Michkov. Bedard, for those unfamiliar, is probably the best prospect since Connor McDavid, a guy who is tearing up the CHL at 17 and scored at McDavid's exact same pace at the exact same age. Huh. So, yeah, Bedard is, you know, the term gets thrown around a lot, but he is the true definition of the generational prospect. And then Michkov is a really good player who's playing in pro leagues over in Russia, who went to the World Juniors and was dominating guys 3 years older than him. He was 17 playing in a U20 tournament and was by far Russia's best player and scored 3 goals in 2 games. So those two guys are just kind of off the charts right now. And that's why Fantilli is third, despite, to me, given this profile right now, probably would go number one in the Owen Power draft. Right? He's a better prospect than anyone's Michigan's had, but he will go probably lower than guys they've had because
of just the way the draft falls.
Sometimes it goes that way. But
he's
a horse. And he will probably be the number one centerman, I would think, in this upcoming season.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that you can look at as not a guy you're looking into the future as one of these players, because, I mean, Michigan's had some players you're like, all right, you bring them in, they're a first round pick, but they need sort of a half a season or a year to develop. And then sort of the jump that we saw Brisson make, and even to an extent, Matty Beniers, that may not be as necessary for a guy like Fantilli.
Possible, yeah.
The last forward Michigan is bringing in is Gavin Brindley. He also will go in the 23 draft, so not this draft upcoming. And you have him listed as a potential first rounder as well.
Yeah, he showed up on Scott Wheeler's top 26 prospects for 2023. I mean, we're very, very far out. That is, you know, it changes so much during the course of the draft eligible year. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, 42 points in 51 games in the USHL with Tri-City, pretty good mark. And he did get to play with USNTTP a little bit at the Five Nations tournament. I mean, classic Michigan mold as an undersized winger. It was really good skating and works hard. We'll see what happens, but a guy who should be able to play right away, but like Fantilli, will be young this season.
Well, the thing that I've noticed so far through a lot of these forwards that has been talked about is like very intense, hardworking, great work ethic. And then even several guys that look like they were going to be competitors, I guess, in the corners and stuff that, you know, the last few years of watching Michigan has not been their forte. It looks like Michigan might be bringing in some guys that could also play a different sort of system and be better suited to adjust to playing teams like Notre Dame and Minnesota that tend to get a little more physical with them.
Yeah, it's possible. But even with a guy, you know, like a Brindley or a Nazar, I mean, the truth is you can have a high work ethic and stuff, but if you're 5'9", 165,
you're only
going to be so successful, right? So yeah, that's just kind of the nature of it. But, you know, just a classic Michigan mold on him.
All right, well, that's it for the forwards. We'll slide to the defenseman. Michigan is bringing in five, which does that seem like a lot to you, given the fact that...
Seems like quite a few.
I mean, you only generally dress six and sometimes seven. And, I mean, unless something happens, Michigan has 4.5 defensemen right now, depending on what you think of Jake Karinen. If he moves to forward or not, that's something we'll address a little bit in segment two. But, I mean, they got four plus maybe a Holtz. And they got five guys coming in. It's going to be interesting trying to find playing time for all these guys unless the injury bug bites.
Yeah, well, you're bringing in a couple of guys who are probably going to be buried for a few years. So yeah, that, I think, alleviates some of the issues. They really didn't bring in any scrubs at forward, right? Like, they didn't bring in any double overagers who probably will never play. They brought in all guys who are going in the draft, most likely.
All right. Well, so Seamus Casey is the headliner, I think, of the defenseman class. He is projected to go mid to late first, maybe early second of this particular draft coming up this summer. You said he had 27 points in 43 games. Mobile, puck mover, plays on the power play a little bit. Not huge. You had a comp of him to Ethan Edwards.
Yeah, from a size standpoint, that's there. I mean, when you hear everything, you know, said right there, that's everything that's kind of said about Ethan Edwards in terms of a transition defenseman who's undersized, blah, blah, blah. Casey is listed at 5'10", but 161, needs to eat some more. And so we'll see about that. I think Cam York is another one. I mean, I would have to watch Casey and see kind of to what extent, because Cam York was a very effective transition defenseman, but he didn't sort of do the sort of same, you know, end to end kind of rushes and have the same level of speed that Edwards has. So I think that is just kind of having to watch him to get a sense there. But Michigan likes him defensively too, which is also why I think Cam York could be a little bit better comparison. But we'll see. You know, that's a guy that should play right away and very much fits the Michigan mold in terms of what they look for.
Well, and he won't have to shoulder a ton of the load because they have two puck rushers or will have two puck rushers and two defensive defensemen right away. So if he fits in well on a top pairing or on the second pairing, you know, that's just a bonus. But if they need to shelter him for a little bit on the third pairing, they'll be able to because it won't be like the last few big name defensemen they brought in where, you know, well, guess what? Here, you know, Quinn Hughes or Cam York or Owen Power, you guys are going right up top. If he does push his way to that far, perfect. But if not, it's kind of you have more options.
I think it's quite feasible that he will be the defenseman at the point on power play too. Mm-hmm. We'll see what they think about Ethan Edwards, but if Casey can do the sort of puck movement at the point better than Edwards can, because Edwards, again, like so much of Edwards' value is when he's really moving up on the play. Wouldn't mm-hmm. shock me to see Casey run power play two. Obviously, Hughes will run power play one, but I could easily see him on power play two right away.
The next guy that we'll get to is was previously mentioned is Luca Fantilli. He is Adam Fantilli's older brother. He is an single overager, so he is going to be a little bit older than some of these guys. His draft year has already passed. He's kind of the part of the reason Michigan gets Adam, I would guess.
Yeah, he's the he's the Michael Dwumfor
that nets Rashawn Gary.
Yeah. So which I guess means he'll be transferring to Rutgers soon, but good hockey school. 24 point. You'd think that Rutger would transfer to Rutger, but I don't know.
Well, there was a defensive tackle a few years ago named Rutger, right? That went from Oregon to Tennessee. I don't know.
I'm not the expert on people named Rutger.
you should be. You're wearing a red shirt.
Fantilli had 24 points in 60 games for the Steel. So, you know, that's not nothing.
No.
The caveat, of course, is that the Steel are extremely good and always are. And they win a lot of games. So that's kind of a component there. But again, in the Michigan mold, is a decent skater who can move around a little bit, can pass a little bit. But I don't necessarily foresee him playing a ton right away, because I think, you know, if Triscott and Person are in the lineup opposite Hughes and Edwards, then you have Casey, and then you've got kind of one spot, and we'll see what happens with Steve Holtz. But we're kind of not a ton of room, and I would think that just shooting from the hip that Hunter Burstevich is probably in line ahead of Fantilli, but I could see him mixing in as a freshman and then is probably a multi-year player.
John Druskinis is a double overager, so Michigan is bringing in some, I don't know, experience and wisdom.
Yeah,
in a couple of these guys.
I'm going to pair him with Brendan Miles, because there's not much to say about either. Okay. They're both the double overagers, the only two in this class. When you get those double overagers, that tends to get in the range of, well, if you defer me one more time, I'm gone. So a lot of cases, that's kind of the make it or break it point, where either you want the guy or you don't, right? That's the gun to your head kind of moment.
Yeah.
And Druskinis and Miles were both guys that played in high school hockey in Michigan. Druskinis played at Heartland. Brendan Miles played at DCC. And then they went on to play in the NAHL. And then Druskinis ended up in the USHL. Miles was still in the NAHL in Fairbanks. Yeah. And Druskinis made his way to the USHL. 11 points in 85 games last two seasons, which is not great, but it tends to be that even if you're going to be more of a stay-at-home defenseman at the college level, you want to score more than that at the lower level. And same thing for the NHL. If you want to be a stay-at-home NHL defenseman, you want to see higher scoring in the NCAA, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know, he is 6'1", and he's more of a physical player, so I kind of saw him in the Keaton Person and Steve Holtz mold, but those guys are both even a little bit bigger than that, and they both scored more than that. Person significantly so at the USHL level. So I don't know. Could be somewhere between those guys and Jake Gingell. I'm not really sure exactly what to say about him. Miles, 17 points in 52 games in the NAHL, is also, I don't know, Not anything to sort of
something
go crazy about. I mean, both of these guys look like depth players who then maybe sort of peek their head out of the ground like tulips and, you know, emerge at a later date to become players. But otherwise, they're probably going to be like you. They're going to be in the press box. So,
hey, I always need buddies. So I think the way that you kind of look at this is that, you know, Michigan has played a number of teams in the tournament that have guys that are, well, they're not guys, they're men at this point. And these are players that Michigan could uncover, like you said, in a few years. So right this next year, Michigan has a number of players that look like they're going to be in the starting lineup for as defensemen, but that will not be the case in 2 to 3 years. And then these are guys that will have been in the system that will have probably, like you said, defensive responsibilities and know what they're doing. And those are guys that in a few years could be very effective. This is not, you're not always recruiting for immediate impact the way Michigan has been doing it forward, and even to some extent at defenseman, but getting these guys in the program as what do you call them? Like positional depth, I guess.
Yeah. They're depth players.
Is kind of key when you have a lot of one and duns or two and duns. You still need those like Van Wise, Luke Martins, who are going to be there for a few years.
Well, there's going to be quite a bit of, Luke Martin was a second rounder, by the way.
Okay.
Career didn't unfold that way, but there's will be a lot more open spots next year because Hughes is kind of in his curtain call season and will be exiting after that. Keaton Pearson will be a senior and will have a COVID shirt available, but you don't know about that. And Ethan Edwards, obviously, he's now been 2 years removed from being drafted. And if he were to pop this year, that's quite possible. He could be claimed at that point. Trish Scott is going to be in his junior season. That's in the territory where he could be claimed. So, you know, those are all potential. Your whole top four could leave. Who knows?
Yeah.
Some number will leave and then you'll need to plug some holes. So that's where it kind of comes into play.
The last guy in this class that Michigan is taking at defense is Hunter Brustewicz.
Brustewicz.
We had Samuskevich last year, so now we have Brustewicz this year. He is not going to be in this draft. He is going to be in the Fantilli draft of 23. So he's young, going to play his D-minus 1 year at Michigan, which is becoming more and more and more popular. Maybe not an instant impact guy, but a guy who is being projected as a potential possible first round pick in 15 months. So this is where, you know, we were debating earlier of who's going to be, it looks like you said, Michigan's returning four, probably going to play Casey. That's a pretty fair bet. The guy who probably is leading the charge for that sixth spot is going to be Hunter in this situation because, well, he's not going to be a first round pick if he's sitting next to me in the press box.
Yeah, he's a guy that hasn't played a ton. He missed basically the whole 2021 season, which he would have been the U-17s with an injury, has had some other injuries in the past. And so people are still kind of feeling out what they have in him. He did play with the NTDP this year. 19 points in 52 games is fine. He's showed up on the Wheeler top 26 prospects for 23 list. He's really, really young. November 29th, 2004 birthday, which in the old days in Ann Arbor Public Schools, December 1st was the cutoff. So this is like
right there.
Yeah, as young as you could be, right? Going to kindergarten at four and not turning five for 3 months. So very, very, very young when in the path he was on. So that means there will be more to work with. But I think the skill set means he should have a shot to really play. I mean, he's mobile and has some offensive touch, and he's pretty strong, 187 pounds at 5'11", which is already filled out a little bit. Could be a late bloomer this year who really makes a jump. We'll see, but I would expect him to battle with Steve Holtz for the seventh spot, and then probably Fantilli after that.
And for Michigan, with their depth situation at defense, this is sort of the perfect year to bring a guy like this in, right? Is because you can kind of take whatever track he gives you. And if he pushes his way onto the top six, then hooray. And if it takes him a few weeks to a couple months to adjust to any number of variables, then that's fine because you have a number of guys ahead of him that can hold that place. But you would expect that given his profile and what people think of him, that eventually he's going to be playing probably at some point next year and definitely after that.
Yeah.
Well, that is the whole class. Michigan did not bring a goalie because they still are going to have a couple. I'm sure they'll have a walk-on that we will preview in the fall when it comes time to looking at every player on the team, but no goalie this year. They still have Portillo and West. Seems like it should be good enough. We will take a break after going through all those guys, and we will look at some of the returners and then where these guys might fit in and throw some darts against a board in a way, and then look at a couple of the other teams in the league and see where the very, very, very early guess as to where Michigan fits in amongst those teams.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Closing time, open all the doors and let you out into the world. Closing time, turn all of the lights on over every boy and every girl. Closing time, one last call for alcohol, so finish your whiskey or beer. Closing time, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. I know who I want to take me home. I know who I want to take me home. I know who I want to take me home. Take me home.
If you are still around, now we will fit in the 12 guys that we just talked about into the rest of the team, which is not quite as many players as they're bringing in or thereabouts. It was there's going to be a lot of turnover, but the pieces that Michigan is bringing back, they have a number of really, really good players. You know, the guys in at forward that are returning, Mackey, Duke, Estapa, and then Ciccolini, which, you know, we kind of forget about because he didn't play this year, but had sort of a promising previous year to that. And then you got guys like Lapointe, Granowitz, and you and I, for the sake of argument, are putting Karen in at forward just because their defense depth looks like pretty fine. Forward depth, not so much. One thing we didn't talk about in the previous segment, do you think that it's possible they get another player or two in the transfer portal, and could it be that guy that was being tweeted around the program a little bit, Casey Dornbach?
So I think they need bodies. They are kind of short at the moment, especially at forward, because, you know, if you, let's say you move Karen into forward, you've got 14, and last year they had 16.
And you dress 13 a night.
Right. You were dressed either 12 or 13, depending on how you use your extra skater. So I think they need more. And Nolan Moyle is in the transfer portal, but is not yet claimed. I don't know if it's a possibility to retrieve him, but that would be an option. Otherwise, somebody else. There's a lot of orphans in the transfer portal looking for homes. And so
it's kind of sad the way you're just putting like little kids on trains is what comes to my mind.
It's like the Humane Society. I don't necessarily think you need an impact guy. Casey Dornbach would be. He's been a point per game player in the ECAC for Harvard for 3 out of 4 years that they have played in the ECAC. So he would be a guy that you would expect to suit up every night and would probably be in your top nine somewhere. So if you want to go and get him, then I'm all for it.
Yeah.
But you just need bodies in case injuries happen. People that can actually suit up unless you're going to take a preferred walk-on or something like that, right? I mean, like Jake Kerenen came kind of out of the woodwork very randomly. Maybe that happens. I don't know. But
sure.
Right now, I think you would prefer to have another guy or two, especially, you know, I don't know if they chose to process Finley Williams. Not sure what happened there, but there was another guy in the class that would slightly fix the forward issue, and now he is not in the class. So I think the transfer portal is the most logical place to solve that issue.
Well, it was just interesting because a couple of people around the program were tweeting about him, including, I think, Mel retweeted it a couple of times.
Mel retweeted, and some people who I would associate as being program sources were putting on the press. So,
right.
We'll see about that.
And which kind of tells you that even if it's not him, they could easily be looking for somebody.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so you look at Mackey and Duke, they're both probably going to be top six guys, right? Like, that seems... Mackey's probably a first liner, I would say. Even pairing him with a guy like Fantilli or whatever on one is already a really good start. Ciccolini seems like he could fit into at least top six, maybe middle six at worst, I would say. And then Estapa's kind of a guy that, well, depending on how you want to fill it out, can go on any lines. He played on the fourth line, could play on a scoring line for as a grinder, even in the corners and stuff.
So if Fantilli really wants to play with grindy type guys, you could do a Duke Fantilli Estapa line. I think that could be pretty interesting.
That's some beef there.
Because it would allow you to then go Samoskevich next to Nazar and Rutger, which would be
not
pretty,
a bad
pretty,
line,
pretty,
which is a very different kind of line.
Right. That would be a much faster and perhaps more skilled one. Ciccolini, I think, would be in the mix. I think him and maybe Gavin Brindley and Hallam as a third line. I think that's one where you would potentially want, if you did get a Casey Dornbach, he could plug in there probably and just give a little more experience to that line. And then fourth line, I guess you're looking at Granowitz, Keenan LaPointe. Draper, and LaPointe maybe.
So you don't have a McCarty kid that you can put on there with...
I don't think he has any kids. I'm not sure. He's at a lot of the Red Wing games.
He's a bit of a wild man at times, is he not?
He had some ups and downs, but he's at he's at Little Caesars Arena a lot. Like, it's not really hard to get your photo with him if you wanted to.
Is that something that's on your list?
I was never into like the crazy McCarty mythology because I was just a little young for that. But
yeah,
he was a lot of fun, a really fun player.
Yeah, but it just kind of would be funny with Draper and LaPointe on Michigan's fourth line for a couple of years. Because, I mean, honestly, well, LaPointe has, what, 3 more years left if he wants? I mean,
yeah.
two really, but...
I saw in the list of recruits, I think Mike Knubel's kid is a recruit somewhere. And he was very briefly a Red Wing from that era. So that could be one of them. But I don't think he's committed to Michigan.
And then defense, you know, we've kind of touched on, but obviously Hughes and Truscott are back or supposedly all of this is presuming that Michigan hockey summer doesn't light all of this on fire. But and then you have Ethan Edwards, of course, and Keaton Pearson. And then so Casey slides in on defense because he's just going to. And then you have 4 or 5 guys for the other spot. You know, Holtz has been on the team. Bristowitz is the guy who's probably the highest ceiling. And then you have the older trio of Fantilli, Druskinis, and Miles. That's really hard to project at this point. But it does look like Michigan should have a pretty talented full roster. Like you said, maybe need another guy at forward or two to create some depth because obviously injuries bite and things happen. But, I mean, from a talent standpoint, that's still pretty loaded. Young, but loaded.
There's a lot of talent there. You know, this recruiting class, let's say, in a reasonable projection, Rutger, Nazar, Casey, and Adam Fantilli are future first-rounders. And then you have Brindley and Brustevich on the cusp. First, second, third, fourth range. Haskins is a later round potential. Draper as a seventh rounder. I mean, that's, you know, it's close to...
And Hallam's already a third or fourth.
And Hallam's already a third rounder. So you're looking at 7, 8, 9 drafted guys, and most of them in the top 3 rounds, and, you know, 3 or 4 of them in the first, potentially. So, yeah, I mean, that's a really good recruiting class. I don't know who has a better one. I think there's definitely other good classes out there because there always are. But, yeah, I mean, I think this is moderately comparable to the you know, the sophomore class that just graduated. That one had what, 4 first rounders and a high second in it. I mean, that's potentially what we're looking at. Maybe a few more higher draft guys, but that was also just so colored by the fact that the 2021 draft was so weak, right? Like, that was not a very loaded draft. And so some of Michigan's guys went very high when they were maybe not in other years.
Well, and when you think of having 4 of the top 5 picks,
you know,
it's so misleading in certain ways.
It takes context out of a situation. Yeah.
Because if you're talking about the 15 draft and you're like, oh, well, we got McDavid and Eichel, it's like, well, that's a bit of a different draft.
Yeah.
And so then you're going to look at goalie, and obviously it's going to be Eric Portillo. He played in literally every game, and he was pulled twice for performance issues and twice because of blowouts to give other people some time. Noah West, we still have no idea because he's played, I think, 2 competitive periods, and those weren't even overly competitive because they were in blowouts. So he's played 2 periods, I guess, at Michigan.
I would expect Portillo to play every game again. And
yeah, and West as needed, or when there's a fill-in or whatever. Not a bad...
And Levy's gone. I assume they'll take a walk-on of some kind to be the
new Chad Cat or
third goalie.
Whomever. But pretty loaded. Are there any guys that stick out to you, I guess, at forward? I mean, obviously, you're probably going to see Samuskevich and Duke. I wouldn't be shocked if you saw Cicilline on the power play as well. It's going to be hard to keep guys like, what, Fantilli and Nazer McGroarty.
Yeah, I mean, they have the ability to spread some guys out. So they could do 2 sort of balanced power plays the way they did at times last year. We'll see what they choose to do. Haskins could be one. We'll see who they want around the net. You could see a stop around the net on a second power play. You know, we'll see what direction they go with there. LaPointe has played net front on the power plays. That's another
one. I think he even played some bumper his first year too. Yeah. So he's a guy who, again, he's player's kid, going to know what he's doing. And that's the interesting thing with guys like that. And then they bring in the Draper kid too. These are guys that you can probably kill penalties with and are probably going to be sound in their own zone on defense. They're going to know what they're doing. So it's not like Michigan is going to be just completely loaded with a bunch of green skaters who don't know what to do on defense. There are some options that they will be able to kill penalties and play decently in their own zone. You know, obviously there are going to have young players, but, it looks like there is going to be a little more experience than maybe we thought a few weeks ago before we dug deeper into this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone that stick out to you on the kill right away? Just by what kind of players they are.
You know, you could see Duke and Estapa on it. I could see Fantilli on it. I could see LaPointe on it. Granowitz, Draper. You could put Hallam on it.
That's what I was going to say.
Option. I mean, Wayne Gretzky used to play on the penalty kill despite not really playing defense just because the threat of the shorthanded goal was so extreme. That's a possibility.
So we can walk through some of the other teams in the league. Minnesota gets a few guys back that were a little bit surprising. No, I mean, we kind of were projecting Nyes to leave and thinking that probably Jackson Lacombe would as well, but they're both coming back, and Brock Faber, surprisingly.
Yeah. So the Lacombe and Faber ones were genuinely surprising. You know, second rounder plays 3 years is not like shocking on the surface, but those were guys that did get some love from the internet scouts and that sort of thing. So I kind of figured that at least one of the two was going to bail. Nyes was an interesting one because it's not often that you hear player picked outside the top 50 as a one and done in college, but it kind of fell that way. And it was definitely not Toronto's choice for him to go back. They put the full court press on and flew him to Toronto, and he met with Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas, and ultimately decided to go back. So that was his choice. The reporting was not off there. It was just that's the way it went down. But I think there's other things he can gain. I mean, he should be a really good player as an all Big Ten caliber guy. You know, they lose Ben Myers, who obviously was kind of a heartbeat of the team next to Nyes, but Logan Cooley is an excellent player and he'll slide in there. And they lose Blake McLaughlin, who's already now in the AHL. But they have Jimmy Snuggerud, very interesting name.
Very Minnesotan name.
However you want to pronounce it, but he's a really good player. And then, I mean, go down the list. Ryan Chesley is a projected first second round. I mean, there's a lot of talent in that class.
Yeah.
They've got the other Lucius, who's kind of like in the third round range. Cal Thomas was a sixth rounder last year. Connor Kurth was the fifth highest scorer in the USHL this year. They've got some guys.
Especially if they get all those guys back, they're going to have a lot of experience there too.
Yeah, and because they have a big class, they processed a bunch of dudes. So if you go down the list to the transfer portal, there's a lot of Minnesota names in there. Ben Brinkman, who is at Notre Dame, which I guess we'll talk about in a minute, but he's out the door. Jack Purbix, gone. Johnny Sorensen, gone. Matt Denman, who like never played, gone. So they needed to clear some space. Oh, Grant Cruikshank, gone. That's like 5-6 dudes that they pushed out that had COVID shirts, but they needed to make room for all of these players, especially when certain key guys who were kind of on the fence decided to come back.
You have
they
a question mark next
are
to
bringing in the Mittelstadt twins, the I presume younger brothers of
Casey.
Yeah. I don't know if that's for sure, but Luke and John. John was not really on draft radars. Luke was last year, but didn't get picked. Could go this year. We'll see.
But Matthew and Mark are not coming.
I'm trying to figure out if they're actually twins. I said they were because they're coming in together, but it could actually be that one is older than the other.
Yeah, it's true.
Let me see. But anyway, Minnesota should be really good. I mean, they're going to bring back Justin Close as well, who obviously finished the season really, really well.
You have a question mark next to Ryan Johnson and Sam
Walker. We haven't heard anything about those guys.
All right. Well, let's talk about that for a second. Like,
They're not twins. That's a good thing I looked it up. One is an October 1st, 2001. The other one is January 22nd, 2003, but they're coming together.
Okay. So back to what I was saying about Johnson and Walker, we haven't heard anything. But as of this taping, there's roughly 2 to 3 NHL games left. So neither of those guys, if they sign, are going to play in the NHL or in the AHL, really, this year.
Yeah.
So why are they leaving then?
Well, Sammy Walker, I mean, it was just today that Dryden McKay got signed. I mean, there's certainly UDFAs out there.
But Johnson's a pick, right?
He's a pick. But, you know, the timeline is really sped up. I mean, like the Michigan Hockey Summer thing is really now like Michigan Hockey Spring.
Spring, yeah.
These things don't really go into the summer anymore. It's kind of changed. But there's still time. And, I mean, they probably know what Johnson's decision is. I just didn't find anything public on it. So,
right.
By the way, if Sammy Walker comes back, he is the nominee for the JT Barrett, Brad Davison Award for Big Ten hockey in this upcoming season just in terms of
longest tenured.
Yeah. Just a guy that seems like he has been there for several decades at this
point. They're processing all these other guys, or at least they're guys that are going into the portal, I guess we can't always assume they're all being processed, but I mean, they need bodies, and so it would sort of make sense that they're keeping space for these couple, which when you add those to the previously stated players and you add in this class, I mean, Minnesota looks like they're going to be the headliner next year. I mean, Michigan, obviously, with explosive years from their freshmen, could be right there too. And obviously, you know, Portillo could win every game for them, but just the depth of kind of everything for Minnesota seems to be maybe the enviable spot in the Big Ten.
I mean, just shooting from the hip, I'd say that Minnesota would be in my preseason top five in the country, and I'd say Michigan would probably be in my 5 to 10 range, roughly.
Yeah.
Michigan has a lot of question marks on forward, but they've got such a high floor between possible Kobe favorite in Luke Hughes and a goalie who was one of the best in the country. So, and obviously the talent coming in. But those two teams should be really good right at the top.
The next guy that you made notes on Notre Dame, who is apparently just taking all the people that Michigan and Minnesota don't want anymore in Ben Brinkman and Finlay Williams.
Yeah, they brought in Ben Brinkman. Solid defensive defenseman will fit in. They got a lot of guys out of the portal that are like actual guys and not just names, right?
Okay.
So they got Chase Primo, who I believe is related to Caden and obviously Keith. He played at Omaha, 23 points for Omaha this past season, and they played a really good conference, so that should translate. Jackson Pearson for New Hampshire, 24 points. They play, I believe, in the Hockey East, which is also a fine conference. That should translate. So those are two probable top nine forwards. And then Drew Bavaro,
Mark's kid?
I'm not sure.
You're too young for Bavaro reference?
I've never heard of the last name Bavaro.
Okay. Well, that's not how it's spelled, but it was more a joke maybe for our older audience.
He was one of the higher names in the portal because he's a sophomore, so he comes with years of eligibility. Drew Bavaro was just dying to get out of Bentley.
He's tired of beating Ohio State, I guess.
Yeah, I know. He brings that with him. Experience on how to beat Ohio State. 27 points as a defenseman. Obviously, Atlanta Hockey, et cetera. Sure. But those four players should all be in the starting lineup, I would expect.
And they keep the good Slygert, right? Landon Slygert, I think.
Well, he was the younger one.
Yeah, but Graham is gone. Spencer Stastny, who's been a pretty good player for them for a while. Max Ellis, I think, was their leading scorer.
He was their leading scorer, but he really cooled off in the second half. So those three are gone. They do return Nick Lieberman, who also has been there for 15 years. And
more of a stay-at-home defenseman as well, I guess.
Oh, he plays on the power play, too.
All of their defensemen really are, but
they also have a couple guys that could be drafted. Maddox Fleming, a mid-rounder. Michael Mastrodominico.
Now, will that name fit on a jersey?
It's going to be a challenge.
It's kind of like with the Rays McClanahan, where it starts like below one shoulder blade and ends below the other shoulder blade.
Yeah, that is not a short one. Yeah. So a couple guys that could go in the draft. I mean, Notre Dame always has a horde of fourth to seventh rounders, and that's how they build their team.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
And they're going to make the tournament and probably upset a team, and they're going to be in the final eight and lose in heartbreaker right before the Frozen Four again. Or in the Frozen Four, because they're Notre Dame after finishing third or fourth in the Big Ten.
That's the way it tends to go.
Yeah.
Galida, I think, will be back.
He was at Cornell for 4 years, right?
Let me look.
Had Bischel, who played decently well. I think he also returns because I think he was a sophomore when Michigan played against him a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so Galida has the ability to return because he played 18-19, COVID, didn't play because Cornell didn't play.
Yeah.
And then last year. So if I'm doing the math right, he's played 4 years legally, but then would still have the COVID year.
Right.
Right.
And unless he's going to be signed, it seems like it's not like he's going to transfer.
He turns 25 in October. Of
course. And then I would guess they get Bischel back too. So they're going to be very Notre Dame next year again.
Never changes. I did learn that somehow the Slygert family produced another child. And
I mean, the Glasgow's had three.
Yeah,
so
I guess they
get three Slygerts.
It boggles the mind. But
this guy's supposed to be really good, though, right? Like,
I don't know. He's in the coming in next year, not this coming season.
Yeah.
So that's on the horizon. But I saw that name and I was just like, They did it again.
Quite literally. All right.
Side note.
Yeah.
This would be an interesting thing to do a piece on in the summer. Okay. But how many guys had siblings? This would be called the anti-Michigan Hall of Fame. In that families that with siblings that played at both MSU and OSU. And I've already thought of a few. Dakota Joshua and Jagger Joshua.
Okay.
Kyle Arnes and Justin Arnes. And Connor Hayward and Casey Hayward. So that's three in three different sports.
Wow. And the siblings played the same sport, though?
Yes.
Okay.
But they could play other sports. I mean,
yeah, you could have a split between, I don't know, a shot putter and a diver or something.
So what my point is, that would be an interesting thing to look into. And
you know who would if be there really is good at coming up with that is Craig Ross.
He could be a good one. Yeah.
He would be ideal for this.
There, if someone had three children and they got the OSU, MSU, Notre Dame trifecta, I think they deserve an award.
I don't think it generally works like that, though. I mean, the splits are kind of weird. Although, you know, well, in basketball, they're comparable. But, you know, Ohio State's probably going to get, in football, going to get the five-star if you're, like, the big swinger guy. And then the three-star who's going to be, you know, around for 5 years is probably going to go to Michigan State and grunt his way into draft selection. But usually you're going to fall into one of those two camps. What's the Notre Dame one? Like, kind of a guy that is either one but a good student?
The one who
decided... He also came to play school?
You know, that he's the one that decided to be Catholic.
He's the Catholic one. Yeah. There you go. Youngest child in the family decides to be Catholic. Okay, that's
as a teenager.
Everyone has their own path, I suppose. But so we'll move on to Ohio.
No, he's
State.
The one that decided to be Irish. That's the big difference.
Deciding to be Irish. All right. Have you ever decided to be Scottish or Welsh?
Not Scottish, but Irish only on the days that the Shamrock Shake is available.
This goes out to one of our good buddies who is, you know who you are. You love the Shamrock Shakes. But so Ohio State is interesting, right? Like, they were in the talk of winning the Big Ten last year up until the last few weeks. Basically hauled there by Jacob Dobish, their standout freshman goalie. They had some players, but, you know, that big series at Yost turned out to be not so great. And Michigan was missing most of their big guns and put Ohio State back in their place, I think, on the ice.
Yeah, Ohio State definitely needs to get better because the team in front of Dobish wasn't really the caliber of the other top teams in the Big Ten. And the stretch run kind of made that clear.
They lose weirdly. Georgie Merkulov, who was
a freshman and was not drafted.
Now, have you ever seen that?
It's not very common, but yeah. I'll say this. Georgie Merkulov scored 20 goals on something like 40% shooting, which is unthinkable.
Maybe he can shoot threes for Michigan basketball. I would take that shooting percentage.
If you have that sort of luck-filled season, that's when you just cash in. And he did the right thing. He cashed in.
But he cashed in with the Bruins, who you would think would be able to see through the shooting percentage.
Oh, you don't know that.
Okay. Well, maybe they are just so good defensively, they need goal scorers. But Grant Gabriel will also not be back. And
he was a good offensive defenseman.
Same with Quinn Preston.
Yeah.
He was a top six forward, I believe.
Yeah, he was decent. Yeah. Those are some losses, but okay.
Yeah.
They returned Mason Lowry, who was their one higher drafted guy, which made sense. He was, had just played one season and was a second rounder. So that fits right in with expectations, and he'll have a chance to be in the All Big Ten conversation next year.
He was also hurt for stretches.
Yes.
Last year.
Yes. Yeah. And they missed him down the stretch, especially. Mm-hmm. They'll get Jake Wise and Gustav Westlund back if they want. But we're not sure about that. I haven't heard anything. Those were both seniors and both played decent roles on last year's team.
And are not NHL guys.
They haven't been drafted, no. And yeah. I didn't really hear a lot in the UDFA market about them, but who knows. So similar roster overall, but a few holes to patch. And they get a few guys. They get Tyler Duke, Dylan's brother. So that will be an interesting storyline next year.
Oh, yeah.
And he's in like the third round range around where Dylan was picked.
But Dylan was projected to go higher, but had a late fall, I think.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, the family is Ohioan, so yeah. That would make sense. And then Stephen Halliday is not a draft guy, but he was one of the two or three highest scorers in the USHL this season. So
is he an overager?
I think so. Okay. But anytime you get the top scorers, that's
sure. Yeah, I mean, especially for a team that generally plays decent defense, gets solid goaltending. The thing that they lack is, you know, offensive spark and a bunch of goals. And when you can get a guy who does that, that's what you're looking for, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, he's a good pickup, and you know, Ohio State should be a solid team. And I would think that they will be in the tournament conversation for sure.
Yeah. Probably duking it out with Notre Dame for third, probably next February and March is a probable guess.
That's a reasonable thought.
Yeah.
Elsewhere around the conference, just at the bottom of the transfer portal stuff, Penn State picked up Ture Linden, a transfer from RPI, 39 points at RPI, 20 goals. So that could be a guy that could produce for them. Wisconsin picked up Kyle McClellan, a sophomore goalie out of Mercyhurst, and they essentially did a goalie trade because Cameron Rowe is gone. He has entered the portal, and you know where he ended up?
I do, and I'm not.
Western Michigan.
Oh, so really? So Cameron, he's taking over for Gary Busey?
Cameron Rowe is headed to Kalamazoo, and they've got Kyle McClellan in there. Mo, I presume, is still around. And then Michigan State is the really interesting one because they are going through a whole change over there. The entire roster has been
turned.
They
currently don't have a coach.
They don't have a coach, but they don't also have much of a roster.
they don't have a program right now.
There is a lot of changes going on. They have four guys they've gotten out of the portal, which makes me kind of wonder when they don't have a coach. Not sure who's recruiting.
Who is getting these guys? Are they just appearing?
They're unilaterally committing without an offer. It's like inviting yourself over for dinner.
I don't have any food. What are you guys cooking? All right, I got to play some hockey.
But they bring in Zach Dubinsky, Justin Jowlin, Michael Underwood, and Nate McDonald. Two forwards, a defenseman, and McDonald is a goalie from Cornell. Didn't play very much.
Well, DeRitter went to NoDak, right?
Right. They lost Aiden Gallagher to Northern. They lost Josh Nodler to UMass. They lost DeRitter to North Dakota. And they lost Christoph Papp, Adam Goodsir, Cole Krieger, and Christian Krieger to the portal. We don't know. They have not been claimed yet. So that's a lot of players. I mean,
Mel Tucker's got some work to do.
Yeah, the Kriegers were two of their top four defensemen. And obviously Nodler was like their one drafted forward and DeRitter was their starter. So that is a lot of turnover.
Yeah, well, that was probably coming. And given what we had to say about Michigan State last year, I guess you could say they'll miss them because they're the best at what they had, but I'm not going to say that all of those players are key contributors to a team that's going to give a whole lot of a run to anybody, I don't think.
It's going to be a tough rebuild for whoever comes in there. We did get the news last week. They're setting their sights pretty high.
Yeah.
There are some good names on that list, including Mike Hastings as the kind of pie in the sky, the coach of Minnesota State, which, you know, look, if they get him, credit to him. That would be an A++++ hire. And I think he'd really fit, you know, kind of their what they're looking to do in terms of what MSU has always been stylistically. And I think he would have the formula to succeed in a conference where recruiting is not going to be easy to that program. But I am skeptical they wouldn't be able to get him, given that Mike Hastings was just in the national title game.
Well,
it doesn't feel like you need to move up really when you can do that where you are. But hey, maybe they throw the bag at him that Minnesota State does not possess.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of decides or depends on what he wants. Does he want to try to hang more conference banners and take a run at a national title, or does he want to get some money and see if he can literally Phoenix a team out of the ashes?
Yeah, I mean, it would be a high degree of difficulty job to pull off, but if he wants to try it, then he can try it. I mean, I've also heard the fella from AIC as another name. Let me just get his name pulled up here for consistency sake. Gary Wright, I believe is that name. That was the old name. Eric Lang, that's the name I was looking for.
Well, and of course, we haven't gone into this, but and we may or will, depending on how the next week plays out. But as of right now, you know, Michigan's coach only has 5 or 6 days left on his contract. And after that, I guess who knows? There are a number of things that could happen, but there could be, I don't know. It's weird that the you know, commits have committed and signed and are going to play, and, you know, we'll see who coaches Michigan. But
I think for a lot of the commits that, you know, Michigan holds a lot of name brand power outside of the coach. And I'm not sure how many commits are committing with the specific purpose
coach.
To play for Mel Pearson as opposed to just the program. So we'll see what happens there. None of us really know. Obviously, there has been no formal public release of the investigation results from WilmerHale. And because WilmerHale is an independent organization, it's not like they have to unless Michigan purchased their services with an explicit termination date.
Yeah,
that a report would need to be released. So I don't really know what's happening there. And there aren't. There's really no public buzz. There are plenty of rumors on the recruiting trail from various people, but they also are not privy to the information from WilmerHale. And
that's sort of why we did this particular podcast, is obviously there's all that uncertainty and speculation going on, but it looks like Michigan is going to have these players and they needed to be addressed and talked about and knowing what's going to happen. Now, clearly, if things go a different direction, players could go different directions depending on how things work out legally and all of that. And if that happens, obviously, we will cover whatever news that we really can, or, you know, come up with opinions or directions as to what the program is going to do. If there is indeed a new coach, if there is indeed different players, that can be addressed. But as of right now, these are the players, and, you know, for at least 5 or 6 more days, this is the coach.
Yep.
Which you may or may not be listening to this before we get to that particular date, but if things are to happen, we will certainly be back to address them. As of right now, there is nothing to address.
Thank you for listening to Michigan HockeyCast 4.26 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak. Come back sometime in the future. Hopefully not this summer, but maybe, if not, at another time when what you'll be thinking about probably is football.